ever.
Right. And the and you also are a double, triple agent, so you must remain involved with them, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, the basic template is that you, one of the things you said somewhere is just, you know, the Book of the Subgenius is about me.
Yeah.
And for me, that allowed me to go back and enjoy those books again, reading them that way.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Scott, I looked at the Dobstown.com, and I had to refresh it, and then it came up, Bob ad absurdum is accurate. Now, I click on Bob, and up comes ad absurdum with two S's. You've spelt the A-B-S-S-U-R-D-M 091408. You might want to correct that spelling.
Okay, let me take a look. Oh, yeah. Okay, well, I'll do that.
Yeah. And let me.
When you click on that, it should be okay. Yeah.
Yeah. If you click on that, yeah, then you get ad absurdum 1A1B, and you date it 9/15, but the date
should be 9/14.
Right. Yeah, we'll make it 9/14, and so you'll correct. Get rid of the 15th, right?
Yeah.
And we'll call
9/14
this
14 Bob time.
Yes, and this is the 15th Bob time.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so that's good. That's up there, and okay. It is very, very intense couple of days here, Brian, because, you know, you've got the Wall Street collapsing, the Illuminati, Rais collapsing all over the fucking place, and we're doing this intense thing with Worcester and you. It's perfect. Perfect. What we're
It's doubly perfect. The way it's funny that you were, you know, kind of half apologizing that you went longer than you thought with Worcester, because Kenzie was actually longer than she thought being out. And honestly, you called. I had enough time to kiss her hello and say hi. And within 2 minutes of her walking in the door, you called.
Great.
You're like, oh, sorry, I'm late. It's like, you're not late, Bob. You're not late. You're right on time.
Yeah, perfect, perfect. I can dig that. Just a second. I'm going to... Scott, entertain Brian while I eat something.
Yeah, Brian, did you, I forget, you know, my attention is going back and forth because I have things I have to work on while you guys are talking, and I'll go back and listen later, but did you mention that you had looked at or read Finnegan's Wake last night?
I'm not sure if I really mentioned it very much. I didn't finish it. I'm somewhere in the, you know, the last tenth of it or something, but I haven't really picked it
wow.
up in probably well over a year.
Yeah, but I'm just intrigued. Just a few minutes ago, you said that the two Stang books, the first two Stang books, are probably the some of the most important books ever published in this country. Now, you're obviously you're well read, very literate guy. You know, there's a lot of important books that have been written. What is your fascination with those two books that you would make such a statement?
Well, on the one hand, they're comprehensivist in the sense that you could have a book that could be describing or detailing or mapping, you know, a more important communication somehow, but the actual style of the writing doesn't necessarily convey a kind of an attitude towards it. Like, to me, the Subgenius books, they have a kind of a fused doubleness going on where they manage to convey what they're talking about in the form of the talking about as well as just the content level of the talking about it. Also, just, when I first encountered Bob's writings, part of the sort of revelation for me was feeling like he just in the first couple of essays I read, I felt like I'd been handed the vocabulary that I needed to describe what it was that I really liked about the Church of Subgenius, and that particularly that, like, to me, the Church of Subgenius are like pentadic in a way, that they actually get beyond I don't know. They just the way that they fuse everything into one monopole, or maybe another way to describe the pentaticness of it would be using a more Bob way to describe it. That, like, you could hallucinate that church is a project of any one of the five major obsolete conspiracies that Bob describes. Like, you could read it as being a kind of a Mossad Jewish trying to bring people back to Jehovah rather than Jesus kind of thing. You could see it as a Catholic kind of a thing. You could see it as a Freemasonic conspiracy, certainly, or a Bolshevik one. Or you could see it as a Nazi thing, especially with the Simon and Schuster, or that would tie into the Freemason thing as well.
Sort of tongue-in-cheek satire. This is, you know, the humor, in a sense, transcends the seriousness of it, or tries to cancel the seriousness of what it might be trying to say at the same time.
Or at least it makes it so that you don't have to have the seriousness of attention, of like literary attention is not a prerequisite for enjoying it, obviously. Like, it clearly appeals to a lot of people. Like, to me, I see a lot of deep literary critical merit in these books that most of the people who enjoy those books wouldn't necessarily dispute that, but they wouldn't care, and they wouldn't think of it that way, and just find it, you know, brutally entertaining on the surface.
Have the books received any critical analysis from literate people?
As far as I know, no. And that's one of the main things that I found stunning about the initial encounter with Bob is that I kind of couldn't believe that no one really had seemed to clue in to what was going on with this church, that people. You know, people, there would be some good one-liners in reviews, like Rolling Stone called it a sick masterpiece for those who can still laugh at the fact that nothing is funny anymore. There's some good one-liners, but I was really actually on a search to see if I could find anyone who was doing, like, a study of the church in a, and it's difficult, and meditating on the way that it's very, they make it very difficult to do a study of the church, because it becomes very, there's this uncomfortable issue raised of, like, well, are you a pink trying to dissect it, or are you in the spirit or something? And so it's like, if you tried to bring a critical analysis to it, it would be subverting your objectivity and trying to make you insecure in your motivations of why you're doing a critical study of it. Like, I once bought a book only for the reason that it was by this guy, do you know Bob Black?
No.
He's an anarchist writer. I know that Nenslow hates him. He was a contributor to the first Subgenius book, and in a lot of ways has a lot of very similar things, very similar attitudes to them or something, but he ended up having a falling out with them anyway. I bought a book of Bob Black's general criticism of underground movements and, like, a collection of articles and reviews of his, and I bought it only because there was a chapter on the Church of Subgenius. And I was like, finally, someone talking about the Church of Subgenius, but all it was just him giving vent to his dissatisfaction with them and his falling out, and it was like a negative review of High Weirdness by Mail, saying that, oh, I've been staying... used to make it seem that he was one of the kooks and he was on the kook side, but here he is just bashing kooks left and right, and I didn't find it very edifying or anything. I was pretty disappointed that I got that book the first time I went to New York, so that ties into the dream, actually, now that I think of it. Anyway, I've read a fair amount of this author Harold Bloom, who's a fairly prominent literary critic. He has some books like he's a big Shakespeare fan. He's like, these days he's become a bit of a defender of the traditional canon of what is literately worth studying against what he calls the school of resentment, which would be the sort of postmodern, post-structuralist tide of wanting to throw out all the dead white men and get some more vital literature that isn't imperialist or something. And reading Harold Bloom, especially his most recent book, was called Jesus and Yahweh, where he's comparing, like, basically he's saying that towards the end of my career as a literary critic, I cannot deny that the most haunting and the most incredible character in all of world literature is Yahweh, and that this character of Jesus really does not add up, and I don't like this Jesus character much, but Yahweh has this unbelievable literary tradition. And to me, I feel like, man, I want to send that guy a copy of the books of the Subgenius, because you got some really bitchin' Yahweh writing in there. Like, they have some of the chapters are, you know, supposed to be like the trance pronouncements of channeled Jehovah One through J.R. Bob Dobbs, and then you have the rantings of these crazy prophets who, in a way, are like, if you took the it's like they're the lost tribe, Jah worshipping, pot smoking tribe of Yahweh worshippers transplanted into geeky white America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you categorize it as being anarchistic?
What was your last sentence? Just say your last 15 words. That the Church of the Subgenius kind of seems to be like a like the literature that you, like Rastafarians, kind of claiming to be basically have some kind of continuity of being a lost tribe of Israel or something. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I don't want to pretend to know exactly what they claim, but what they're not exactly known for is being super literate. Like, they have a very well-known oral, musical, reggae-ish tradition of, like, singing, that kind of thing. But if you took, like, Rastafarians and the serious claim of Rastafarians to being prophets of Jah, Yahweh, Jehovah One, and actually injected some serious literacy into it, then that it's like the books of the Subgenius are like what would come out to me. So I've had for a while, I've been wondering, like, what kind of a letter would I write to Harold Bloom if I wanted to recommend the books of the Subgenius, or should I just leave it the way it is as this incredible, ironic, like, seemingly the guy who could appreciate it the most just has no idea, and maybe it's just my own fantasy that they're the best and that he'd like them.
Okay, let me say some things. I had it on mute the whole time, but I heard everything. First of all, I agree with every word you said, everything you said, and a few little details. The word I think Scott was looking for was patina.
Yes.
Yeah. Bob Black, he got very serious problems with the church. He was accused of sending a bomb to Stang, and I think they went to court, or it got pretty bad. You know what I mean?
Well, he accused them
of Stang,
or someone operating in Stang's behalf, yeah, of sending some kind of a miniature bomb to him.
Right. Yeah, you're right. So what happened? Do you know what happened to that?
No.
Anyways, I mean, Bob Black, I mean, that happened, I think, in the 80s, you know, maybe before I showed up. And
okay.
Stang won't even, I mean, he'll rant on about me, but he won't discuss Bob Black at all. It's almost like they have an out-of-court agreement, you know, not to discuss it.
Yeah, well, there was one thing that was pretty intriguing that Menzlow said, which was, at some point, I remember some old Thought Slack archive, and he put it in all caps. So, like, it was in response to someone saying, like, hey, guess what? Good news. And Menzlow was like, what? Bob Black is dead, and I can finally release the letters that he sent to me?
Yeah, it's something like
that. Clearly there's something really serious going on.
Yeah, there's very serious court stuff in there, because it was a serious charge, accusing Stang of trying to bomb and kill him.
Yeah, I guess so.
But Bob Black wrote a good article, it's probably in that collection, on, like, 86, 87. He put down the rise of Pomo irony. And Subgenius was the king of this double irony going on, which he said was ruining the anarchist movement or whatever, right?
Hmm. Yeah, okay.
You don't remember that article?
I don't think I read the one about irony. I just remember his review of High Weirdness by Mail and then some other interview where he was describing the Bond thing.
Yeah, you should try to get that article. It's good. It's about the rise of irony, the church of genius, and bullshit that's ruining the revolution. You know what I mean? He's really complaining about the Android meme and the McLuhan media level, but he doesn't know it.
Yes.
Okay, the other thing, everything you said was fantastic. Now, Harold Bloom, I've met in New York. He's a big, fat slob. an
somehow
old guy.
I believe you. I don't doubt that.
No, he's a big, fat slob, and he's a crummy guy with big breath, bad breath, and you know, he's the old P.O.B., and he's right about the can up to a point, but again, these guys are stupid because they won't include McLuhan. He's probably gay, so they don't deal with anybody who's a Catholic, so they won't deal with McLuhan. And he could clarify a lot of his fucking issues if he brought in McLuhan, you know. But they won't. They can't. I mean, he made a big deal in the early 70s with his the anxiety influence theme. That was his big meme and big revelation for literary criticism. Which then,
yeah, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, no, and it's all pretty good left hemisphere complicated thinking, but it's still
like
just
to me, like that's one of the many questions and dilemmas that the answer is simply slack. That's how you get over the anxiety. Like that's how James Joyce got over his anxiety of influence, is that he didn't drop the anxiety and figured, okay, I'll just pour every possible influence I can even find.
Yeah. Okay. So the it was very interesting what you said, and it's true. In the Book of the Subgenius, they list the stalactites, all the clenches, or all these influences. They list everything. They got Joyceans, Gurdjieffians. It's incredibly encyclopedic, and you have to know a lot about fringe culture, collective culture, the New Age, everything that ever happened. And that's the impressive stuff in the Book of Subgenius. An incredible encyclopedia of everything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if
that to me that's partially the pentadic nature or something.
I agree with you totally. It's pentadic. It's in the pentadic quadrant, which is the Croker quadrant. Because each named quadrant is really LaRouche is looking at the monad from the dyad. Thompson's looking at the dyad from the triad. McLuhan's looking at the triad from the tetrad, even though he's put in the triad zone. I'm looking at the pentad from the hexad position. Croker's looking at the tetrad from the pentad, chip body android meme. And so one of the reasons to have Bob, if anybody has thought about it, why is Bob Dobbs in the Croker quadrant, in the fifth column on the right, under Bob Dean, Bob Never, Bob Marshall, Bob Never, Bob Dobbs, and then Rumpelstiltskin? And why is there a Bob Dobbs quadrant? Why is Bob in both? Well, if push comes to shove and someone actually point out to me, the Bob Dobbs in the Croker quadrant is referencing to the whole cult of the Church of Subgenius, and that it was significant enough to be put into the Bob chart. And that's what impressed you, is that you found someone who was thinking about that, them and all that. And so, you know, I could be a Harold Bloom and be intellectual sophisticated on it, but I one-upped everybody by coming in as a critic of the Church of Jesus and claiming I'm Bob. That was the act of genius.
Exactly. Because, like, to me, that seemed like the... In a way, it was disappointing because I would like to, you know, see my own long-running thoughts mirrored in detail, but that the appropriate response to the pentaticness of it is that the claiming to be Bob thing is the kind of giving them almost the highest honor and then leaving it at that. And then after that, just saying, ignore it, forget it. Criticizing only.
Yeah, and then improving on it, being the St. Augustine. It's like, I mean, I won up to Luce and Guattari and Baudrillard and everybody in the literary pomo criticism world by what I did. On the level, it's only one part of me, on the level of literary criticism, I did it. I was the greatest critic of our time and how you would do it. If McLuhan was going to do it, it's like Croker says that McLuhan was the first to go over to the other side and go into the simulacrum and deal with it. Well, yeah, he started it. But how would you do it in the digital age? You'd do it the way I did it.
Yes.
You know, McLuhan didn't...
And I'm not just saying that. Like, I'm a big fan of all those guys, but when you say, like, I won up Baudrillard and Deleuze and Guattari, I agree, I'm not just being polite.
Yeah, like, I know. Yeah, you know, you understand. You get me. As Garrett said to me, you get me, boy, you get me.
I know.
Okay, so we need to start taping. All that stuff we just did for 20 minutes should have been on tape. We'll come back to that another way. I almost don't want to even talk about the Church Sub Genius too much, but let's talk about how great I am.
I got plenty to start off with that's not that.
Yeah, and we're going to begin with this dream, which is, I noticed on Five Body, you did refer to it. It's an X-Files dream.
I did. Yes. Are we taping?
No, not yet, but I just want to say I did notice this morning after last night. I mean, it was incredible. We led up to this incredible thing. Okay, now the dream. And then we go through media fast. You know what I mean?
And I said, hopefully tonight I'll get around to mentioning, I'll get around to talking about that.
Is that right? You said that earlier.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it didn't, so it was funny.
Although I'll have to, of course, between then and now, I'll have to give a little Zanocrony digest of today, but only a very brief one.
Yeah, and one thing to mention, you just talked about the Rastafarians as failing in the literary criticism level to be the Book of the Ship Genius, but Scott, when I called Brian earlier today, as he was talking to me, a guy walks by with a Bob Marley shirt on, but it has a huge Bob emphasized.
Yeah.
Think of that. That relates to what you just said 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, yes, exactly. That the famous Bob Slackmaster there's the subgenius Bob Slackmaster and there's the explicitly Rastafarian Bob Slackmaster.
Yeah, and the point Brian made, Scott, today was you never see the emphasis on Bob on a Rastafarian T-shirt.
Mm. Okay.
But it happened. Yeah. It walked by right when he was talking to me.
Yeah.
Were you going to mention that today? Tonight in your preliminaries at Zanocrony?
I did mean to get around to it. It relates to another Zanocrony I had a couple of years ago or a year and a half ago or something.
Okay, so we're going to say, Scott, do I need to mention what happened or we just say, here it is, 24
hours
later?
Because I'm going to splice in, we only did like 18, you know, I don't know, 20 minutes or something last night before it went dead. So I'm going to take this and splice it onto there, and you're going to have to say, you know, we just blipped out and now we're back, or whatever you need to say.
I don't understand. You're going to splice it at the 18-minute mark?
Yeah, I like to make these about an hour long. So I'm going to...
It can't follow that way.
The next 40 minutes are going to get spliced onto what got cut off last night.
Huh.
That could work.
No, but wait, Scott, you're not talking about the chronology order. What he said the first 18 minutes last night, we then, when we hear the replay, we'll hear what we're going to hear now at the 19-minute
mark. No.
Wait a minute.
I'm getting things confused in both of our minds. First of all, we had a problem where we got cut off last night, and then we got started, and then we continued on.
Yeah.
Okay, I spliced those two pieces together, so that made up, that was part of the first hour.
Okay.
Then we went on to do the second hour. Then we started the third hour, and partway into the third hour, when Brian started to talk about his dream, his phone went dead. That's where we're going to pick up, and I'm going to splice that onto the end of the third hour.
Okay, so in the third hour, did it go off at 18 minutes again?
No, I mean, I could check, but I'm not sure how to check right now.
Yeah, you just were mentioning 18, and that's earlier not what you mean.
Right.
So you want us to complete the hour with this, what we're going to tape now?
Yeah, pick up with the dream. You could mention, when I hit record, you could mention that Brian's phone just went dead. We're picking up with the dream. And
24 hours later.
Yeah, and then that'll round out the third hour, and if we continue on another hour beyond that, it'll be a new file.
Okay, so I'm going to mention the date. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm ready.
Oh, I just wanted to ask, you must have seen this, Brian, but I typed ad absurdum into the Google, and at the top of the list, there's a band called Arcturus that performs ad absurdum. Did you know that?
I've seen that at some point. There might even be a YouTube video of them playing it.
Did you know that Arcturus is a star in The Booties, which is a big theme in Bob's Cosmology?
Really?
Oh, yeah. No,
I didn't know that about the star Arcturus. That's really perfect.
Yeah, you know about the Bootians, right? You've heard me talk about that a lot.
Yeah,
right. That they're the ones going to make the contact. Well, they have seven stars. The Bootians is a constellation with seven stars. One of them is Arcturus.
Okay, well then we got to start right away. If they have 7 stars, then that is very perfect.
Oh, okay.
Even more perfect than I thought.
We don't want to lose this. So you said, let's start quickly. Get the